kayfabe, and I wasn't about to enlighten him. "Irrelevant," I said coldly. "Now you're going to take us to Robert. Where is he?"
"You forget, Rose," mused Victor. "You aren't the one with compulsion here."
"No, but I'm the one who can tie you up by the side of the road and make an anonymous call back to the prison with your whereabouts.
How do I know you won't get what you want from me and then turn me back in anyway?" he asked. "I have no reason to trust you."
"You're right. I sure as hell wouldn't trust me. But if things work out, there's a chance we might let you go afterward." No, there really wasn't. "Is this something you want to gamble on? You'll never get another opportunity like this, and you know it." Victor had no witty quip for that. Score another one for me. "So," I continued, "are you going to take us to him or not?" Thoughts I couldn't read churned behind his eyes. No doubt he was scheming about how he could work this to his advantage, probably figuring out how to escape us before we even reached Robert. It was what I would have done.
"Las Vegas," Victor said at last. "We need to go to Las Vegas." Chapter 8.
After the bitching I'd done to Abe about always going to remote, crappy places, I should have been excited about the prospect of going to Sin City. Alas, I had a few reservations about my next epic trip. First of all, somewhere like Las Vegas was the last place I would expect a semi-crazy recluse to be. From the bits and pieces I'd heard, Robert had dropped off the radar and wanted to be alone. A busy, tourist-filled city didn't really fit that description. Second, cities like that were perfect feeding grounds for Strigoi. Crowded, reckless, low inhibitions, very easy for people to disappear, especially when most of them were out at night. Part of me was certain it had to be a trick on Victor's part, but he swore up and down that it was true. So, with no other leads, Las Vegas became our next destination. We didn't have much time to debate the matter anyway, knowing the Guardians would be searching Fairbanks for us. Admittedly, Lissa's charms had altered our appearances enough that they wouldn't be looking for people with our descriptions. They knew what Victor looked like, though, so the sooner we were out of Alaska, the better. Unfortunately, we had a slight problem.
"Victor has no ID," said Eddie. "We can't take him on a plane."
It was true. All of Victor's possessions had been seized by prison authorities, and in the midst of disabling surveillance and taking out half a dozen Guardians, we'd hardly had time to go searching for his personal stuff. Lissa's compulsion was phenomenal, but she was exhausted after wheeling so much at the prison. Besides, Guardians would likely be watching the airport. Our friend Bud, the car rental guy, provided the solution. He hadn't been thrilled to see his car returned with all the scratches from Eddie's daredevil driving, but enough cash had finally stopped the humans muttering about renting to a bunch of kids. It was Victor who thought of an alternative plan and suggested it to Bud.
"Is there a private airport nearby with flights we might charter?"
"Sure,"
said Bud.
"But it won't be cheap."
"It's not an issue," I said. Bud eyed us askance.
"Did you guys rob a bank or something?"
"No, but we were packing a lot of currency. Lissa had a trust fund that doled her out monthly money until she was 18, as well as a high-limit credit card. I had a credit card of my own, left over from when I'd sweet-talked Adrian into funding my Russian trip. I'd let go of the rest of my assets, like the huge bank account he'd set up. But wrong or not, I'd decided to keep one card on hand, just in case of emergency. This was certainly an emergency, so we used the card to pay for part of the private plane's cost. The pilot couldn't take us as far as Las Vegas, but he could take us to Seattle, where he was able to connect us with another pilot he knew who could go the rest of the way. More money. And Seattle again, I mused, just before the plane took off. The little jet's interior had a set of four seats, two on each side, facing each other. I sat next to Victor, and Eddie sat across from him. We figured that was the best protective configuration.
"What about Seattle?"
asked Eddie, puzzled. "Never mind. Little private jets aren't nearly as fast as big commercial ones, and our trip took a large part of the day. During it, I continued asking Victor about his brother's role in Las Vegas and finally got the answer I wanted. Victor would have had to tell us eventually, but I think he'd gotten a sadistic thrill out of prolonging the answer. "Robert doesn't live in Las Vegas proper," he explained. "He has a small house, a cabin, I suppose, out by Red Rock Canyon, miles outside the city." Ah, now that was more what I'd expected. Lissa stiffened at the mention of a cabin, and I felt unease through the bond. When Victor had kidnapped her, he'd taken her to a cabin in the woods and tortured her there. I gave her as reassuring a look as I could. It was times like these I wished the bond worked both ways so that I could truly send her comfort. "So we'll go out there?" Victor snorted.
"Certainly not. Robert values his privacy too much. He wouldn't let strangers come to his home. But he'll come to the city if I ask."
Lissa eyed me. Victor could be setting us up. He had lots of supporters. Now that he's out, he could call them instead of Robert to meet us. I gave her a tiny nod, again wishing I could respond back through the bond. I thought of this as well. It was imperative we never leave Victor alone to make unsupervised calls. And actually, this plan to meet in Las Vegas itself made me feel better. For our own safety from Victor's henchmen, it was better to be in the city than out in the middle of nowhere.
"Seeing as I've been so helpful," said Victor, "I have the right to know what you want with my brother."
He glanced at Lissa.
"Looking for spirit lessons? You had to have done some excellent investigative work to find out about him."
"You have no right to know about our plans," I retorted sharply. "And seriously, if you're keeping track of who's been the most helpful here, we are totally beating you on the scorecard. You've got a ways to go to catch up after what we did at Tarasov."
Victor's only response was a small smile. Some of our flight time took place at night, which meant it was early morning when we landed in Las Vegas. The safety of sunlight. I was surprised to see how crowded the airport was. The private one in Seattle had had a fair amount of planes, but the Fairbanks airport had nearly been deserted. This strip was chock full of little jets, many of them screaming luxury. I shouldn't have been surprised. Las Vegas was the playground of celebrities and other wealthy people, many of whom probably couldn't lower themselves to fly commercial with ordinary passengers. There were taxis there, sparing us the ordeal of another rental car. But when the driver asked us where we were going, we all stayed silent. I turned to Victor.
"The middle of the city, right? The Strip?"
"Yes," he agreed. He'd been certain Robert would want to meet strangers somewhere very public, somewhere he could easily flee.
"The Strip's a big place," said the driver. "You got any place in particular, or should I just drop you off in the middle of the street?"
Silence fell over us. Lissa shot me a meaningful look.
"The witching hour?"
I considered it. Las Vegas was a favorite place for some Maroi. The bright sun made it less appealing for Strigoi, and the windowless casinos created comfortable, dark atmospheres. The Witching Hour was a hotel and casino we'd all heard of. While it had plenty of human customers, it was actually owned by Maroi, so it had lots of clandestine features to make it a great getaway for vampires. Feeders in back rooms, special Maroi-only lounges, a fair number of guardians on patrol. Guardians. I shook my head and glanced sideways at Victor.
"We can't take him there."
Of all the hotels in Las Vegas, the Witching Hour was the last we'd want to go to. Victor's escape had to be breaking news all over the Maroi world. Taking him into Vegas's largest concentration of Maroi and guardians was probably the worst thing we could do at this point. In the rearview mirror, the driver's face looked impatient. It was Eddie who finally piped up.
"The Luxor."
He and I were in the back seat, with Victor between us, and I peered over.
"Where did that come from?" "It puts distance between us and the Witching Hour."
Eddie suddenly looked a little sheepish.
"And I've always wanted to stay there. I mean, if you're coming to Vegas, why not stay in a pyramid?"
"You can't fault that logic," said Lissa.
"The Luxor it is,"
I said to the driver. We rode in silence. All of us, well, except for Victor, staring at the sights in awe. Even in the daytime, the streets of Las Vegas were teeming with people. The young and glamorous walked side by side with older couples from Middle America, who'd probably saved and saved to make this trip. The hotels and casinos we passed were huge, flashy, and inviting. And when we reached the Luxor,
yup,
it was just like Eddie had said, a hotel shaped like a pyramid. I stared up at it when we got out of the car, trying hard not to let my jaw drop like the starry-eyed tourist I was. I paid the driver and we headed inside. I didn't know how long we'd be staying, but we definitely needed a room as our base of operation. Stepping into the hotel was like being in the nightclubs in St. Petersburg and Novosibirsk. Flashing lights and the overwhelming scent of smoke. And noise. Noise, noise, noise. The slot machines beeped and rang, chips fell, people yelled in dismay or delight, and the low thrum of conversation filled the room like humming bees. I grimaced. The stimuli grated on my senses. We passed through the casino's edge to get to the front desk, where the attendant didn't even blink at three teenagers and an old man getting a room together. I had to imagine that around here, they saw it all. Our room was average size, with two double beds, and somehow we'd lucked out with an amazing view. Lissa stood at the window, entranced by the sights of people and cars on the strip below. But I jumped straight to business.
Okay, call him, I ordered Victor.
He'd settled down on one of the beds, hands crossed and expression serene, as though he truly were on vacation. Despite that smug smile, I could see the fatigue etched on his face. Even with his blood refill, the escape and long trip had been exhausting, and the effects of his slowly returning disease were naturally taking a toll on his physical strength. Victor immediately reached for the hotel's phone, but I shook my head.
Liss, let him use your cell. I want a record of this number.
She gingerly handed the phone over, as though he might contaminate it. He took it and gave me a nigh angelic look.
I don't suppose I could have some privacy. It's been so long since Robert and I have talked.
No,
I snapped. The harshness in my voice startled even me. And it occurred to me Lissa wasn't the only one suffering from all the spirit used today. Victor gave a small shrug and began dialing. He'd told us on one of the flights that he had Robert's number memorized, and I had to take it on faith that that was who he was calling. I also had to hope Robert's number hadn't changed. Of course, even Victor hadn't seen his brother in years. Victor had only been imprisoned a short while and had probably kept tabs on Robert beforehand. Tension filled the room as we waited while the phone rang. A moment later, I heard a voice answer through the phone speaker, though I couldn't make out the exact words.
Robert, said Victor pleasantly. It's Victor.
This received a frantic response on the other end. I only could hear half of the conversation, but it was intriguing. Victor first had to spend a lot of time convincing Robert that he was out of prison. Apparently, Robert wasn't so removed from Aroy society that he was out of touch with current news. Victor told him that the details would be revealed later, and then began making his pitch for Robert to come meet us. It took a long time. I got the feeling that Robert lived in fear and paranoia, which reminded me of Ms. Karp when she'd been in the advanced stages of spirit's insanity. Lissa's gaze stayed fixed on the scene outside the window during the entire call, but her feelings mirrored mine. Fear that this could someday be her fate, or mine as well, if I siphoned away spirit's effects. The image of the Tarasov sign flashed briefly through her mind. Warning, now entering prisoner area, psychiatric. Victor's voice turned surprisingly cajoling as he spoke to his brother, gentle even. I was reminded uneasily of the old days, before we'd known about Victor's demented plans for Maroi domination. Back then, he'd treated us kindly too, and had practically been a member of Lissa's family. I wondered if at some point he'd been sincere, or if it had all been an act. Finally, after almost 20 minutes, Victor convinced Robert to come see us. The unintelligible words on the other end of the phone were filled with anxiety, and at this point, I felt convinced that Victor truly was talking to his crazy brother and not one of his accomplices. Victor set up a dinner meeting at one of the hotel's restaurants and at last disconnected.
Dinner? I asked when Victor set the phone down. Isn't he worried about being out after dark?
It's an early dinner, Victor replied. 4:30, and the sun won't go down until almost 8.
4:30? I asked, Good God, are we getting the senior citizen special?
But he made a good point about the time and sun. Without the safety of Alaska's nearly nonstop summer light, I was starting to feel suffocated by the pressure of sunrise and sunset boundaries, even though it was summer here. Unfortunately, a safe early dinner still meant we had hours to pass. Victor leaned back on the bed, arms behind his head. I think he was attempting an unconcerned air, but my guess was that it was actually exhaustion driving him to seek the bed's comfort.
Care to try your luck downstairs?
He glanced over at Lissa.
Spirit users make remarkably good card players. I don't have to tell you how good you are at reading people.
She made no response.
Nobody's leaving this room, I said.
I didn't like the idea of us all being cooped up here, but I couldn't risk an escape attempt or Strigoi lurking in the casino's dark corners. After showering the dye from her hair, Lissa pulled up a chair by the window. She refused to get any closer to Victor. I sat cross-legged on the second bed, where there was plenty of room for Eddie to sit too, but he remained upright against a wall, in perfect guardian posture, as he watched Victor. I had no doubt Eddie could maintain that position for hours, no matter how uncomfortable it got. We'd all been trained to endure harsh conditions. He did a good job at looking stern, but every once in a while, I'd catch him studying Victor curiously. Eddie had stood by me in this act of treason, but still didn't know why I'd done it. We'd been there a few hours when someone knocked at the door. I leapt up. Eddie and I mirrored each other, both of us straightening to rigid attention, hands going for our steaks. We'd ordered lunch an hour ago, but room service had long since come and gone. It was too early for Robert, and besides, he didn't know the name our room was under. There was no nausea, though. No Strigoi at our door. I met Eddie's gaze, silent messages passing between us on what to do. But it was Lissa who first acted, rising from her chair, taking a few steps across the room.
It's Adrian!
What? I exclaimed. Are you sure? She nodded. Spirit users usually saw auras, but they could sense each other if they were close enough, just as she had at the prison. Still, none of us moved. She gave me a dry look.
He knows I'm here, she pointed out.
He can feel me too. I sighed, still keeping my hand on my steak, and strode toward the door. I squinted through the peephole. Standing there, his expression amused and restless, was Adrian. I could see no one else, and with no indication of Strigoi to be found, I finally opened the door. His face lit with joy when he saw me. Leaning in, he gave me a quick kiss on the cheek before stepping into the room.
You guys didn't really think you could go off on a party weekend without me, did you? Especially here, of all places.
He froze, and it was one of those rare moments when Adrian Ivashkov was caught totally and completely off guard.
Did you know, he said slowly, that Victor Dashkov is sitting on your bed?
Yeah, I said. It was kind of a shock to us, too. Adrian dragged his gaze from Victor and glanced around the room, noticing Eddie for the first time. Eddie had been standing so still that he practically seemed like part of the furniture. Adrian turned to me.
What the hell is going on? Everyone is out looking for him.
Lissa's words spoke to me through my bond. You might as well tell him. You know he won't leave now. She was right. I didn't know how Adrian had found us, but now that he had, there was no way he'd go. I glanced, hesitantly, at Eddie, who guessed my thoughts.
We'll be fine, he said. Go talk. I won't let anything happen.
And I'm strong enough again that I can compel him if he tries anything, Lissa added.
I sighed. Okay, we'll be right back. I took Adrian's arm and led him outside. As soon as we were in the hallway, he started in again.
Rose, what?
I shook my head. In our time here, I'd heard enough noise from other hotel guests in the hall to know that my friends would hear our conversation if we talked out there. Instead, Adrian and I took the elevator and headed downstairs, where the noise of the casino would mask our words. We found a slightly out-of-the-way corner, and Adrian practically pushed me against the wall, his expression dark. His light attitude annoyed me sometimes, but I preferred it to when he was upset, largely because I feared Spirit would add an unstable edge.
You leave me a note saying you're sneaking off for one last party weekend, and instead I find you holed up with one of the most notorious criminals ever. When I left court, that's all everyone was talking about. Didn't that guy try to kill you?
I answered his question with a question.
How did you even find us?
The credit card, he said. I was waiting for you to use it.
My eyes widened.
You promised me when I got all those that you wouldn't go snooping.
Since my accounts and cards had come with his help, I'd known he had access to the records, but I believed him when he'd said he'd respect my privacy.
When you were in Russia, I kept that promise. This is different. I kept checking and checking with the company, and as soon as the activity with the charter plane showed up, I called and found out where you were going.
Adrian's arrival here, so soon after ours, wasn't that unbelievable, if he had been monitoring the card. Once he'd had the information he needed, he could have easily booked a flight. A non-stop commercial jet would have made up the time on our slower, multi-stop trip.
There was no way I could resist Vegas, he continued. So I thought I'd surprise you and show up to join in the fun.
I'd used my card for the room, I realized, again tipping off our location. No one else was linked to my or Lissa's cards, but the ease with which he'd tracked us made me nervous.
You shouldn't have done that, I growled. We might be together, but there are boundaries you've got to respect. This is none of your business.
It's not like I was reading your diary. I just wanted to find my girlfriend, and...
It was a sign of Adrian's distress that his mind was only now beginning to backtrack and put pieces together.
Oh, Lord. Rose, please tell me you guys aren't the ones who busted him out. They're all looking for two human girls and a Dompier guy. The descriptions don't match at all, he groaned. But it was you, wasn't it? Somehow you broke into a maximum security prison. With Eddie.
Must not have been all that secure, I remarked lightly.
Rose, this guy is fucked with both of your lives. Why would you free him?
Because, I hesitated. How could I explain that which, by all evidence in our world, was impossible? And how could I explain what goal in particular was driving this? Victor has information we need, or... Well, he has access to someone we need. This was the only way we could get it.
What on earth could he possibly know to make you do all this?
I swallowed. I walked into prisons and nests of Strigoi, but saying what I did next to Adrian filled me with apprehension. Because there might be a way to save Strigoi, to turn them back to the way they were. And Victor knows someone... Who might have done this? Adrian stared at me for several long seconds, and even in the midst of the casino's movement and noise, it was like the world grew still and silent.
Rose, that's impossible.
It might not be.
If there was a way to do that, we would know.
It involves spirit users, and we only just found out about them.
That doesn't mean it's...
Oh, I see.
His deep green eyes flashed, and this time, they were angry.
It's him, isn't it? This is your last crazy attempt to get to him, to Dimitri.
Not just him, I said vaguely. It could save all Strigoi.
I thought this was over,
Adrian exclaimed. His voice was loud enough that a few people at nearby slot machines glanced over.
You told me it was over. You told me you could move on and be with me.
I meant it, I said, surprised at the desperate note in my voice. It's something we only just found out about. We had to try.
And what then? What if this stupid fantasy works? You free Dimitri in some miraculous act, and you drop me like that?
He snapped his fingers.
I don't know, I said wearily. We're just taking this one step at a time. I love being with you, really, but I can't ignore this.
Of course you can't.
He turned his eyes heavenward.
Dreams, dreams. I walk them. I live them. I delude myself with them. It's a wonder I can spot reality anymore.
The weird sound of his voice made me nervous. I could recognize one of his slightly crazy spirit-induced lapses. Then, he turned from me with a sigh.
I need a drink.
Whatever pity I'd felt for him turned to anger.
Oh, good. That'll fix everything. I'm glad in a world gone mad, you've still got your old standbys.
I flinched at his glare. He didn't do it very often. And when he did, it was a powerful thing.
What do you expect me to do?
He asked.
You could...
Oh, God.
Well, now that you're here, you could help us. Plus, this guy we're meeting, he's another spirit user.
Adrian didn't betray his thoughts, but I had a feeling that I had piqued his interest.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want. To help my girlfriend get her old boyfriend back.
He turned away again, and I heard him mutter,
I need two drinks.
4:30, I called after him. We're meeting at 4:30.
There was no response, and Adrian melted into the crowd. I returned to the room in a dark cloud that had to be obvious to everyone. Lissa and Eddie were smart enough not to ask questions, but Victor, of course, had no such reserves.
What? Mr. Ivashkov isn't joining us? I'd been so looking forward to his company.
Shut up,
I said, crossing my arms and leaning against the wall near Eddie. Don't speak unless you're spoken to. The next couple hours dragged by. I was convinced that any minute Adrian would come back and reluctantly agree to help us. We could use his compulsion if things went bad, even though he couldn't match Lissa. Surely he loved me enough to come to my aid. He wouldn't abandon me.
You're an idiot, Rose. It was my own voice that chastised me in my head, not Lissa's. You've given him no reason to help. You just hurt him again and again, just like you did Mason.
When 4:15 came around, Eddie looked over at me.
Should we stake out a table?
Yeah. I was restless and upset. I didn't want to stay in this room any longer, trapped with dark feelings that wouldn't go away. Victor rose from the bed, stretching as though getting up from a relaxing nap. Still, I could have sworn there was an eager glint hidden in the depths of his eyes. By all accounts, he and his half-brother were close, though I'd seen no indication that Victor displayed love or loyalty to anyone. Who knew? Maybe somewhere there was true affection for Robert. We formed a sort of protective configuration with me in the front, Eddie in the back, and the two Maroi between us. I opened the room's door and came face to face with Adrian. His hand was raised as though he'd been about to knock. He arched an eyebrow.
Oh, hey,
he said. He had the standard laid-back Adrian expression on his face, though his voice was a bit strained. I knew he wasn't happy about any of this. I could see it in the tight set of his jaw and agitation in his eyes. Nonetheless, he was putting on a good front for the others, for which I was grateful. Most importantly, he'd come back. That was what mattered, and I could ignore the scent of alcohol and smoke wreathing him.
So, I hear there's some party going on. Mind if I join you?
I gave him a weak, grateful smile. Come on. Our group, now up to five, we headed down the hall toward the elevator.
I was cleaning up at poker, you know, Adrian added. So this better be good.
I don't know if it'll be good, I mused. The elevator doors opened. But I think it'll be memorable. We stepped inside, off to see Robert Tarrou, and what might be Dimitri's only salvation. Chapter 9. Robert Tarrou was easy to spot. It wasn't because he looked like Victor. It wasn't even because of any dramatic running toward each other reunion type thing between him and his brother. Rather, it was Lissa's mind that tipped me off. I saw Robert through her eyes. The golden aura of a spirit user lighting up his corner of the restaurant like a star. It caught her by surprise, and she stumbled briefly. Spirit users were too rare a sight for her to be fully used to them. Seeing auras was something she could tune in or out, but just before turning his off, she noted that even though his had the brilliant gold she saw in Adrian, there was also a feel of instability to it.
Sparks of other colors flashed there too, but they trembled and flickered. She wondered if it was a mark of Spirit's insanity setting in. His eyes lit up as Victor approached the table, but the two didn't hug or touch. Victor simply sat down beside his brother. The rest of us stood there awkwardly for a moment. The whole situation was too weird, but it was the reason we'd come, and after several more seconds, my friends and I joined the brothers at the table.
Victor! Breathed Robert, eyes wide. Robert might have had some of the Dashkov facial features, but his eyes were brown, not green. His hands toyed with a napkin.
I can't believe it! I wanted to see you for so long!
Victor's voice was gentle, as it had been on the phone, as if he were talking to a child.
I know, Robert. I missed you too.
Are you staying? Can you come back and stay with me?
Part of me wanted to snap that that was a ridiculous idea, but the desperation in Robert's voice sparked a tiny bit of pity in me. I remained silent, simply watching the drama before me unfold.
I'd hide you. It'd be great. Just the two of us?
Victor hesitated. He wasn't stupid. Despite my vague claims on the plane, he knew the odds of me letting him go were non-existent.
I don't know, he said quietly. I don't know.
The waiter's arrival jolted us out of our haze, and we all ordered drinks. Adrian ordered a gin and tonic and wasn't even carded. I wasn't sure if it was because he looked 21 or was convincing enough with Spirit. Regardless, I wasn't thrilled about it. Alcohol muted Spirit. We were in a precarious situation, and I would have liked him at full strength. Of course, considering he'd been drinking earlier, it probably didn't matter now. After the waiter left, Robert seemed to notice the rest of us. His eyes passed over Eddie quickly, sharpened at Lissa and Adrian, and lingered on me for a long time. I stiffened, not liking the scrutiny. He finally turned back to his brother.
Who have you brought, Victor?
Robert still had that oblivious, scattered air to him, but it was lit with suspicion now. Fear and paranoia.
Who are these children? Two spirit users and...
His gaze fell on me again. He was reading my aura.
One of the Shadow-Kissed?
For a moment, I was astonished at his use of the term. Then I remembered what Mark, Oksana's husband, had told me. Mark had once been bonded to a Dampier, and that Dampier had died, drastically speeding up the deterioration of Robert's mind.
They're friends, said Victor smoothly. Friends who'd like to talk to you and ask you some questions.
Robert frowned.
You're lying. I can tell. And they don't consider you a friend. They're tense. They keep their distance from you.
Victor didn't deny the friend claim.
Nonetheless, they need your help, and I promised it to them. It was the price for me being allowed to visit you.
You shouldn't have made promises for me.
Robert's napkin was now in shreds. I kind of wanted to give him mine.
But didn't you want to see me? Asked Victor winningly.
His tone was warm, his smile almost genuine. Robert looked troubled, confused.
I was again reminded of a child and was starting to have my doubts that this guy had ever transformed a Strigoi.
He was spared an answer yet again when our drinks arrived. None of us had even picked up our menus, much to the waiter's obvious annoyance. He left, and I opened mine without really seeing it. Victor then introduced us to Robert, as formally as he might at any diplomatic function. Prison hadn't dulled his sense of royal etiquette. Victor gave first names only. Robert turned back to me, that frown still on his face, and glanced between Lissa and me. Adrian had said that whenever we were together, our auras showed that we were linked.
A bond. I've almost forgotten what it was like. But Alden, I've never forgotten Alden.
His eyes grew dreamy and almost vacant. He was reliving a memory.
I'm sorry, I said, surprised to hear the sympathy in my words.
This was hardly the harsh interrogation I'd envisioned.
I can only imagine what it must have been like, losing him.
The dreamy eyes grew sharp and hard.
No, you cannot. It's like nothing you can imagine. Nothing. Right now, you have the world. A universe of senses beyond those of others. an understanding of another person that no one can have. To lose that. To have that ripped away. It would make you wish for death.
Wow. Robert was really good at killing conversation. And we all kind of sat there hoping the waiter would return this time. When he did, we all made half-hearted attempts at ordering food. Except Robert. Most of us deciding on the spot. The restaurant served Asian cuisine, and I ordered the first thing I saw on the menu, an egg roll sampler. With food ordered, Victor continued taking the firm hand with Robert that I seemed incapable of managing.
Will you help them? Will you answer their questions?
I had a feeling that Victor was pushing Robert on this, not so much as a way to pay back us rescuing him, but rather because Victor's scheming nature was dying to know everyone's secrets and motivations. Robert sighed. Whenever he looked at Victor, there was such a strong expression of devotion and even idol worship. Robert probably couldn't refuse his brother anything. He was the perfect type to play into Victor's plans, and I realized I should possibly be grateful that Robert had grown unstable. If he'd been in full control of his powers, Victor would never have bothered with Lyssa last time. He would have already had his own private spirit wielder to use however he wanted.
What do you want to know?
Asked Robert blearily. He addressed me, apparently recognizing my leadership. I glanced at my friends for moral support and received none. Neither Lyssa nor Adrian approved of this mission in the first place, and Eddie still didn't know its purpose. I swallowed, steeling myself, and directed my full attention to Robert.
We heard you freed Estragoy once, that you were able to convert him, or her, back to their original state.
Surprise flashed on Victor's usually composed face. He certainly hadn't expected this.
Where did you hear this?
Demanded Robert.
From a couple I met in Russia. Their names are Mark and Oksana.
Mark and Oksana.
Again, Robert's gaze slipped away for a moment. I had a feeling this happened a lot, that he didn't spend much time in reality.
I didn't know they were still together.
They are. They're doing really great. I needed him back in the present.
Is it true? Did you do what they said? Is it possible?
Robert's responses were always preceded by a pause.
Her.
Huh?
It was a woman. I freed her.
I gasped in spite of myself, hardly daring to process his words.
You're lying.
It was Adrian who spoke, his tone harsh. Robert glanced at him with an expression amused and scornful.
And who are you to say that? How can you tell? You've bruised and abused your power so much it's a wonder you can even touch the magic anymore. And all these things you do to yourself, it doesn't truly help, does it? Spirit's punishment still affects you. Soon you won't be able to tell reality from dream.
The words stunned Adrian for a moment, but he kept going.
I don't need any physical signs to see that you're lying. I know you are because what you're describing is impossible. There's no way to save Estragoy. When they're gone, they're gone. They're dead. Undead. Forever.
That which is dead doesn't always stay dead.
Robert's words weren't directed at Adrian. They were spoken to me. I shivered.
How? How did you do it?
With a stake? She was killed with a stake and in doing so was brought back to life.
Okay, I said. That is a lie. I've killed plenty of Estragoy with stakes, and believe me, they stay dead.
Not just any stake.
Robert's fingers danced along the edge of his glass.
A special stake.
A stake charmed with spirit, said Lyssa suddenly.
He lifted his eyes to her and smiled. It was a creepy smile.
Yes. You are a clever, clever girl. A clever, gentle girl. Gentle and kind. I can see it in your aura.
I stared off at the table, my mind in overdrive. A stake charmed with spirit. Silver stakes were charmed with the four main Moroi elements. Earth, air, water, and fire. It was that infusion of life that destroyed the undead force within Estragoy. With our recent discovery of how to charm objects with spirit, infusing a stake had never even occurred to us. Spirit healed. Spirit had brought me back from the dead. and joining with the other elements within a stake, was it truly possible that the twisted darkness that gripped Strigoi could be obliterated, thus restoring that person to their rightful state? I was grateful for the food's arrival because my brain was still moving sluggishly. The egg rolls provided a welcome opportunity to think.
Is it really that easy?
I asked at last. Robert scoffed.
It's not easy at all.
But you just said we need a spirit-charmed stake, and then I kill a Strigoi with it.
Or, well, not kill. The technicalities were irrelevant. His smile returned.
Not you. You can't do it.
Then who?
I stopped, the rest of my words dying on my lips.
No. No.
The Shadowkiss don't have the gift of life. Only the spirit blessed, he explained. The question is, who's capable of doing it? Gentle girl or drunken sod?
His eyes flicked between Lyssa and Adrian.
My wager would be on gentle girl.
Those words were what snapped me out of my stunned state. In fact, they were what shattered this whole thing, this far-fetched dream of saving Dimitri.
No, I repeated, even if it was possible, and I'm not sure if I believe you. She can't do it. I won't let her.
And in a turn of events almost as astonishing as Robert's revelation, Lyssa spun toward me, anger flooding our bond.
And since when can you tell me what I can or can't do?
Since I don't recall you ever taking guardian training and learning to stake a Strigoi, I returned evenly, trying to keep my voice calm. You only punched Reed, and that was hard enough. When Avery Lazar had tried to take over Lyssa's mind, she'd sent her Shadowkiss brother to do some dirty work. With my help, Lyssa had punched him and kept him away. It had been beautifully executed, but she'd hated it.
I did it, didn't I? She exclaimed.
Lys, throwing a punch is nothing like staking a Strigoi, and that's not even counting the fact that you have to get near one in the first place. You think you could get in range before one bit you or snapped your neck? No.
I'll learn.
The determination in her voice, and mine, was admirable, but it took guardians decades to learn what we did, and plenty still got killed. Adrian and Eddie looked uncomfortable in the midst of our bickering, but Victor and Robert seemed both intrigued and amused. I didn't like that. We weren't here for their entertainment. I tried to deflect the dangerous topic by turning back to Robert. If a spirit user brought back a Strigoi, then that person would become Shadowkissed. I didn't point out the obvious conclusion to Lyssa. Part of what had driven Avery crazy, aside from normal spirit usage, had been bonding with more than one person. Doing so created a very unstable situation that rapidly led all people involved into darkness and insanity. Robert's eyes grew dreamy as he stared beyond me.
Bonds form when someone dies, when their soul has actually left and moved on to the world of the dead. Bringing it back is what makes them shadow-kissed. Death's mark is upon them.
His gaze suddenly snapped onto me,
just as it is on you.
I refused to avoid his eyes, despite the chill his words sent through me. Strigoi are dead. Saving one would mean its soul was brought back from the world of the dead, too.
No, he argued. Their souls do not move on. Their souls linger, neither in this world nor the next. It's wrong and unnatural. It's what makes them what they are. Killing or saving a Strigoi sends the soul back to a normal state. There is no bond.
Then there's no danger, Lyssa said to me.
Aside from a Strigoi killing you, I pointed out.
Rose,
we'll finish this conversation later. I gave her a hard look. We held each other's gazes a moment, and then she turned to Robert. There was still an obstinacy in the bond I didn't like.
How do you charm the stake?
She asked him.
I'm still learning.
I again started to chastise her, and then thought better of it. Maybe Robert was wrong. Maybe all it actually took to convert a Strigoi was a spirit-infused stake. He only thought a spirit user had to do it because he had done it. Allegedly. Besides, I'd much rather Lyssa preoccupy herself with charming than fighting. If the charm part sounded too hard, she might have to give up altogether. Robert glanced at me, and then Eddie.
One of you must have a stake on you. I'll show you.
You can't take a stake out in public,
exclaimed Adrian, in what was a remarkably wise observation.
It might be weird for humans, but it's still obvious that it's a weapon.
He's right,
Eddie said.
We could go back to the room after dinner, said Victor. He had that perfectly pleasant and bland look on his face. I studied him, hoping my expression showed my distrust. Even with her zeal, I could sense the hesitation in Lyssa, too. She wasn't keen on following any suggestion of Victor's. We'd seen in the past how desperately far Victor would go in attempting to fulfill his plans. He'd convinced his own daughter to turn Strigoi and help him escape jail. For all we knew, he was planning the same for...
That's it!
I gasped, feeling my eyes go wide as I stared at him.
That's what?
Victor asked.
That's why you had Natalie turn. You thought... You knew about this. What Robert had done. You were going to use her Strigoi strength and then have him turn her back.
Victor's already pale face went paler, and he seemed to age before our eyes. His smug look disappeared, and he looked away.
Natalie is dead and long gone, he said stiffly. There's no point in discussing her.
Some of us made an attempt to eat after that, but my egg roll seemed tasteless now. Lyssa and I were thinking the same thing. Among all of Victor's sins, I'd always considered him convincing his own daughter to turn Strigoi to be the most awful. It was what had really sealed the deal for me about him being a monster. Suddenly, I was forced to reevaluate things, forced to reevaluate him. If he'd known he could bring her back, it made what he had done terrible, but not as terrible. He was still evil in my mind, no question. But if he had believed he could bring Natalie back, then that meant he believed in Robert's power. There was still no way I was letting Lyssa near Strigoi, but this incredible tale had become slightly more credible. I couldn't let it go without further investigation.
We can go up to the room after this, I said at last, but not for long.
My words were to Victor and Robert. Robert seemed to have faded into his own world again, but Victor nodded. I gave Eddie a quick glance and got a curt nod of a different sort from him. He understood the risk in taking the brothers to a private place. Eddie was telling me he would be extra vigilant, not that he wasn't already. By the time we finished dinner, Eddie and I were both rigid and tense. He walked near Robert, and I stayed by Victor. We kept Lyssa and Adrian between the brothers. Yet even keeping close, it was hard as we cut through the crowded casino. People stopped in our path, walked around us, through us. It was chaos. Twice our group got split by oblivious tourists. We weren't too far from the elevators, but I was getting uneasy about the possibility of Victor or Robert running off through the mob of people.
We need to get out of this crowd,
I shouted over to Eddie. He gave me another of his quick nods and took an abrupt left that caught me by surprise. I steered Victor in that same direction, and Lyssa and Adrian sidestepped to keep up with us. I was puzzled until I saw that we were approaching a hall with an emergency exit sign on it. Away from the busy casino, the noise level dimmed.
Figured there are probably stairs here,
Eddie explained. Crafty guardian, I flashed him a smile. Another turn showed us a janitorial closet on our right, and ahead of us, a door with a symbol for stairs. The door appeared to lead both outside and to upper floors.
Brilliant, I said.
You're like on the 10th floor,
pointed out Adrian. It was the first time he'd spoken in a while. Nothing like a little exercise to...
Damn!
I came to an abrupt halt in front of the door. It had a small warning sign saying that an alarm would go off if the door was opened. Figures.
Sorry,
said Eddie, like he was personally responsible.
Not your fault, I said, turning.
Back we go. We'd have to take our chances in the crowd. Maybe the roundabout detour had tired Victor and Robert out enough to make escape unappealing. Neither of them was that young anymore, and Victor was still in bad shape. Lyssa was too tense to think much about being led around, but Adrian gave me a look that clearly said he thought this traipsing was a waste of his time. Of course, he thought this whole Robert thing was a waste of time. I was honestly surprised he was coming with us at all back to the room. I would have expected him to stay in the casino with his cigarettes and another drink.
Eddie, leading our group, took a few steps back toward the casino down the hallway. And then it hit me.
Stop!
I screamed. He responded instantly, coming to a halt in the narrow space. A bit of confusion followed. Victor stumbled into Eddie in surprise, and then Lissa stumbled into Victor. Instinct made Eddie reach for his stake, but mine was already out. I'd grabbed it as soon as the nausea had swept me. There was Strigoi between us and the casino.
Chapter 10. And one of them...
No, I breathed. Even as I sprang toward the one closest to me, a woman, there appeared to be three Strigoi around us. Eddie was in motion too, and both of us were trying to shove the Moroi behind us. They didn't need much urging. At the sight of Strigoi, the Moroi had begun to back up, creating sort of a bottleneck. Between Eddie's instant reflexes and the Moroi panic, I was pretty sure no one had noticed what I already had spotted. Dimitri was among them.
No,
I said this time to myself. He'd warned me. Over and over, he'd said in his letters that as soon as I was out of the safety of the wards, he would be coming for me. I'd believed him, and yet, seeing the reality of it was a totally different thing. It had been 3 months, but in that instant, a million memories ran through my mind in crystal clear sharpness. My captivity with Dimitri, the way his mouth, so warm, despite his cold skin, had kissed mine. The feel of his fangs pressing into my neck and the sweet bliss that followed. He looked exactly the same, too, with that chalky white pallor and red-ringed eyes that so conflicted with the soft, chin-length brown hair and otherwise gorgeous lines of his face. He even had a leather duster on. It had to be a new one, seeing as his previous coat had gotten pretty torn up in our last fight on the bridge. Where did he keep getting them?
Get out! I yelled.
My words were to the Moroi, even as my stake bit into the female Strigoi's heart. The momentary confusion with all of us in the hall had been more of a detriment to her than me. I got a good line of sight on her, and it was clear that she hadn't expected me to be so fast. I'd killed a lot of Strigoi because they'd underestimated me. Eddie didn't have my luck. He stumbled when Victor shoved past him, allowing the other Strigoi, a guy, near the front to backhand Eddie against the wall. Still, that was the kind of thing we faced all the time, and Eddie responded beautifully. He immediately came back from the hit, and with the Moroi out of the way now, Eddie was able to lunge toward the Strigoi and engage him fully. And me? My attention was on Dimitri. I stepped over the fallen Strigoi without even looking at her. Dimitri had hovered near the back, sending his minions into the front lines of battle. Maybe it was because I knew Dimitri so well, but I suspected he wasn't surprised that I'd take out the one so quickly and that Eddie was giving the other a tough time. I doubted Dimitri cared whether they lived or died. They were just distractions for him to get to me.
I told you,
said Dimitri, eyes both amused and sharp. He was watching my every move, each of us subconsciously mirroring the other as we waited for an opening to attack.
I told you I'd find you.
Yeah? I said, trying to ignore the grunts of Eddie and the other Strigoi. Eddie could take him. I knew he could.
I got the memos.
A ghost of a smile curled up Dimitri's lips, showing the fangs that somehow triggered a mix of both longing and loathing in me. Instantly, I shoved those feelings aside. I'd hesitated before with Dimitri and nearly died because of it. I'd refused to let it happen again. And the adrenaline pumping through my body served as a good reminder that this was a do-or-die situation. He made the first move, but I dodged it, almost having sensed it coming. That was the problem with us. We knew each other too well, knew each other's moves too well. Of course, that hardly meant we were an even match. Even in life, he'd had more experience than me, and his Strigoi abilities tipped the scale.
Yet here you are,
he said, still smiling.
Foolishly stepping outside when you should have stayed in the safety of court. I couldn't believe it when my spies told me.
I said nothing, instead attempting a swipe with my stake. He saw that coming too and sidestepped it. His having spies didn't surprise me, even in the daytime. He controlled a network of Strigoi and humans alike, and I'd known he had eyes and ears observing Kort. The question was, how the hell had he gotten into this hotel in the middle of the day? Even with human watchers at the airport or monitoring credit cards as Adrian had done, Dimitri and his Strigoi friends should have had to wait until nightfall to get here. No, not necessarily, I realized a moment later. Strigoi occasionally had workarounds, trucks and vans with dark, completely sealed cabins, underground entrances. Maroi wanting to casino jump from the witching hour knew about secret tunnels connecting certain buildings. Dimitri would have known about all this too. If he'd been waiting for me to come outside of Ward's, he would have done whatever it took to get to me. I knew better than anyone else how resourceful he was. I also knew he was trying to distract me with talking.
And strangest of all, he continued, you didn't come alone. You brought Maroi. You've always taken risk with your own life, but I didn't expect you to be so hasty with theirs.
Something occurred to me then. Aside from the faint hum of the casino on the other end of the hallway and the sounds of our fight, everything else was silent. We were missing an important noise, say like the alarm from a fire door.
Lissa, I yelled, get the hell out of here! Get them all out of here!
She should have known better. They all should have known better. That door led to the upper floors, and outdoors. The sun was still out. It didn't matter if the alarm brought hotel security down on us. Hell, that might scare the Strigoi off. What mattered was that the Maroi fled to safety. But a quick check of my bond told me the problem. Lissa was frozen, stunned. She'd suddenly seen who I was fighting, and the shock of it was too much. Knowing Dimitri was a Strigoi was one thing. Seeing it, really, really seeing it, well, that was different. I knew from personal experience. Even after being prepared, his appearance still unnerved me. She was blindsided, unable to think or move. It only took me a heartbeat to assess her feelings. But in a fight with a Strigoi, a single second could be the difference between life and death. Dimitri's chatter had worked, and although I watched him and thought I had my guard up, he got through and shoved me against the wall, hands pinning my arms so painfully that I lost my grip on the stake. He put his face right up to mine, so close that our foreheads touched.
Rosa, he murmured.
His breath was warm and sweet against my skin. It seemed like it should have smelled like death or decay, but it didn't.
Why? Why did you have to be so difficult? We could have spent eternity together.
My heart thundered in my chest. I was afraid, terrified of the death that I knew had to be seconds away. And at the same time, I was filled with sorrow over having lost him. Seeing the features of his face, hearing that same accented voice that even now wrapped around me like velvet. I felt my heart breaking all over again. Why? Why had this happened to us? Why was the universe so cruel? I managed to flip the switch again, once more shutting out the fact that this was Dimitri. We were predator and prey, and I was in danger of being eaten.
Sorry,
I said through gritted teeth, shoving hard and failing to break his grip. My eternity doesn't involve being part of the undead mafia.
I know, he said.
I could have sworn there was sadness in his face, but later convinced myself I must have imagined it.
Eternity will be lonely without you.
A piercing shriek suddenly rang in my ears. Both of us winced. Noises intended to startle humans were hell on sensitive hearing like we had. Yet I couldn't help but feel relief. The fire door. Finally, those idiots, and yes, I had no qualms about calling my friends idiots when they were acting that way, had left the building. I felt sunlight through the bond and took comfort in that as Dimitri's fangs neared the artery that would spill the life's blood from my neck. I hoped the alarm would distract him, but he was too good. I struggled once more, hoping I could use surprise on him, but it was to no avail. What did surprise him was Eddie's stake plunging into the side of his stomach. Dimitri snarled in pain and let go of me, turning on Eddie. Eddie's face was hard, unblinking. If seeing Dimitri fazed him, my friend didn't show it. For all I knew, Eddie wasn't even registering this as Dimitri. Probably all he saw was a Strigoi. It was the way we were trained. See monsters, not people. Dimitri's attention was off me for the moment. He wanted to draw out my death. Eddie was simply an annoyance he needed to rid us of so that he could continue the game. Eddie and Dimitri engaged in a dance, similar to the one